divine leaders and the painful end of their lives in order to comfort and actually console the Prophet ﷺ, and actually for strengthening his spirit, for showing a actually general and conclusive policy. The Quran, addressing the Prophet, commands him, and at first says, recite that which has been revealed to you of the book. اُتُلُ مَا أُوحِيَ إِلَيْكَ مِنَ الْكِتَابِ. So the Prophet ﷺ is commanded to recite these verses because whatever he wants is found in them. Knowledge and wisdom, advice, admonition, the criterion of the cognition of the right and wrong, the means of actually enlightening the heart and spirit, the path of every group and people to move along. They are all in the Holy Quran mentioned implicitly and mostly explicitly. Only it depends on the one to ponder over the verses. So the Prophet ﷺ should recite it and apply it in his life, recite it and be inspired by it. He should recite it, he should enlighten his heart by the light of its recitation. That's why we are highly recommended in many hadith, in many traditions, to recite Quran on a daily basis, to keep ourselves in touch with the Holy Quran. Now, next to this command, which is indeed an instructive one, it pays to the second command, which is the main branch of education. وَأَقِمِ الصَّلَاةِ, and establish the prayer. We'll talk more about this part of the verse in the next episode, God willing. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Iran Radio from the heart of Tehran. We're grateful you stay tuned with us throughout the day. First, another compelling segment from our radio productions. We've put together a variety of engaging pieces for your listening enjoyment. Then, for a segment featuring profound scholarship, we bring you Ulema's speech. In this program, we broadcast excerpts from the Farsi and Arabic voices of well-known and reputable Islamic and Shia scholars and authorities with English translation, a unique opportunity to learn from the masters. To cap off this hour, it's time for Minbar. In this program, we present selected excerpts from the speeches of renowned Islamic scholars, covering a wide range of topics including ethics, theology, Quranic interpretation, Islamic history, and at times social and political issues. Such powerful messages from the scholars. Next up, it's time for another segment of Radio Productions. Stay with us.
Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we provide an in-depth analysis of the Zionist entity's criminal behaviour and the effort it puts into influencing international policymakers and global public opinion. In today's show, we're returning to Jeffrey Epstein's role as an asset of the Zionist colony, following the revelations contained in the latest tranche of emails released by the United States House Oversight Committee in November. Taken in conjunction with a raft of hacked emails from the former Israeli Prime Minister, they illustrate the extent of Epstein's role, as Latifa Abouchaker will explain in our first report.
Jeffrey Epstein's emails shows he has various connections and interests related to Africa, including organizing meetings for prominent figures with African leaders, discussing potential business deals with Zionist intelligence agency-connected firms. Epstein helped to orchestrate meetings for former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak with high-level officials from Côte d'Ivoire, including the Chief of Cabinet for President Ouattara, Sidi Timoko Touré. This effort reportedly bore fruit with a formal bilateral defense and internal security agreement between Israel and Côte d'Ivoire in 2014. The Zionists had, though, been supplying arms to Côte d'Ivoire for years. Since 2004, during the country's first civil war, Côte d'Ivoire had been subject to a UN arms embargo, and in April 2013, the UN Security Council reported the discovery of dozens of crates of Israeli ammunition at the presidential palace and the Atukob naval base, with Israel Military Industries labels and Spanish markings. It was reported that the ammunition had been relabeled and retransferred to Côte d'Ivoire from a third country. In May 2013, Ehud Barak called the honorary consul of Côte d'Ivoire in Israel, Michael Mickey Federman, chairman of Elbit Systems. Elbit had supplied military helicopters to Côte d'Ivoire during the First Ivorian Civil War. Dropsite has reported that Epstein and Barak worked together as a conduit for Israel's intelligence sector in Côte d'Ivoire, where Barak was welcomed as a representative of the Israeli government even after leaving public office. Epstein helped Barak deliver a proposal for mass surveillance of Ivorian phone and internet communications, crafted by former Israeli intelligence officials. In September 2013, the details of Israel's offer to the West African country arrived in Barak's inbox from Aaron Zevi Farkash, former head of Israeli military intelligence from 2002 to 2006, and a veteran of Unit 8200 for SIGINT, Signals Intelligence Organization, in Côte d'Ivoire. The document, a 13-page PDF, mapped out the complete architecture for eavesdropping on phone calls, satellites, tactical radio, and special targets like cyber cafes. The data streams flowed to media processing servers to be reviewed by analysts, then synthesized into reports for security leaders. By June 2014, Avigdor Lieberman, Israel's Minister of Foreign Affairs, arrived in Côte d'Ivoire to sign an agreement on defense and internal security, accompanied by more than 50 businessmen who came to evaluate prospective investments in the country. The Epstein emails and a hacked collection of Ehud Barak's emails inbox highlight how Epstein leveraged his network and financial influence to connect powerful people, explore business deals, and pursue Zionist military and intelligence interests. They show both the deeply embedded connections of Epstein to Zionist intelligence priorities and the emerging influence of the Zionist state in an area of the world far removed from West Asia.
As usual, I'm joined in the studio by David Miller, who's the UK's foremost scholarly critic of Israel and our resident expert. He's a co-director of the lobbying watchdog Spinwatch and a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyn University. And joining us once again as our guest contributor today is an American author, political commentator and human rights activist Dan Kovalik. His latest book, The Case for Palestine, that was published last year, is a must-read treatise that explains why everyone should care about what happens in Palestine. Welcome to the show. David, listening to Latifa's report there, it seems that Jeffrey Epstein and Israel's former Prime Minister Ehud Barak were as thick as thieves, weren't they? I mean, what's your take on how they were involved in this intrigue?
Well, the interesting thing to start pulling on the thread is that Barak was involved in this after he was Minister of Defence, after he was Prime Minister. He was still regarded and accepted by his interlocutors as being an official representative of the Zionist regime, and also so was Epstein. So this is an indication of the way in which these deals are done, that the formal positions that people have are not really necessarily any guide. So the people who supplied the PDF about the signals intelligence proposal, they're not supposed to give it to people who are not formally part of the regime, and they're not supposed to give it. Weren't supposed to give it to the Ivory Coast, but of course, because of the way in which these things work, that was just seen as normal, and that's the way all the way through the Epstein affair. Actually, I mean, Epstein worked out of Les Wexner's house, which Wexner then gave to him, cost $50 odd million, but he was supposed to not be involved at all with Wexner's foundation, but the emails show that actually he was intimately involved even after he was supposed to have resigned.
Right, very interesting indeed. Well, Dan, I mean, Barak seems to have been very close to Epstein and was filmed even trying to disguise himself, leaving Epstein's New York apartment. I mean, what did you make of their relationship?
Well, I mean, I think they were co-collaborators. They were both working in the interests of Israel on a number of projects, including, as you mentioned, in Cote d'Ivoire. I think even deeper, the more that one thinks about it, it's not just on behalf of Israel, but I think in general on behalf of the West. I think Israel, what you're seeing in Africa is they're doing the dirty work that the other Western countries can't do, right? Like giving guns to Cote d'Ivoire when there's an arms embargo against it, right? Giving surveillance to the government there to gain the upper hand in a civil war, all to, extract the very rich resources of that country. And again, Epstein and Barak were partners in crime in those efforts.
Yes, absolutely. Well, David, how did Epstein come to have those contacts then in the Ivory Coast, or with the Ivory Coast?
Well, he had all sorts of contacts, didn't he? He had contacts in the academic world, he had contacts in the finance world, and he had contacts amongst, what should we say, a network of paedophiles and child traffickers, right? So a lot of contacts. And of course those contacts overlap with each other. Now, in the case of Cote d'Ivoire, he had known since 2002 a young model from the Ivory Coast who was actually the niece of the current president of the Ivory Coast. And so she had traveled on the Lolita Express. And in this process of trying to pitch for these intelligence contracts in the Ivory Coast, she was involved in meetings with Epstein, as well as Barak having meetings with the president and advisors to the president. So that those worlds all intersect with each other. So it's not clear whether she was raped and abused by Epstein or his people, but she was traveled on the Lolita Express, and that's an indication, really, that those worlds are very, very interconnected.
Indeed. Wang has weaved a very tangled web, hasn't he, for sure. But, Dan, I mean, that detail in our film about the chairman of Elbit Systems being the honorary consul of the Ivory Coast in Israel is pretty remarkable, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of bizarre. I mean, you have an Israeli representing Cote d'Ivoire in Israel, right? It just shows how much Israel came to dominate that country. Again, through these arms deals, through the helicopters provided, through the intelligence system set up, a really intelligence apparatus that Israel set up in Côte d'Ivoire, Côte d'Ivoire really becomes a almost a neo-colony of Israel. And again, it's shown by the fact that they would have a consul who's Israeli in Israel.
Not just the Greater Israel project then in the immediate sort of region, but the Zionist influence seeking to spread its wings, much, much further afield. Doesn't it indicate that from what we've been hearing?
Well, absolutely. It's global. And again, particularly in Africa, which is a country that's been very dominated, obviously, by the West. Its resources have been plundered, and Israel has played a key role there. And again, I emphasize that Israel, they come in to support countries that no one else can do openly. One of the most, of course, egregious examples of this was South Africa itself, which Israel supported to the bitter end, apartheid South Africa, after even it became embarrassing for the United States to do that. We saw that even in Guatemala, right? Israel supported the military, brutal military regime there, again, when the U.S. openly could not do it. So it extends even beyond Africa into Latin America. Colombia as well, the head of the paramilitary death squads, Carlos Castaño, said he owed his life and country to Israel. So, I mean, they have their tentacles everywhere.
Sure, no, absolutely. Of course, we should remember that, Africa is a huge continent, not just a country as well. But David, just say a bit more, will you, about this deal made with the Ivory Coast to set up cybersecurity and spying operations in the country.
So this is the modus operandi of the Zionist entity, isn't it? That they use their intelligence services to create intelligence products, which they then sell to other countries, in this case, the Ivory Coast, whereas, and then what happens, of course, is that there's always, and has been from the 50s, a back door put into these by the Mossad, by Unit 8200. I mean, one of the first was one which was in which Robert Maxwell, as a Mossad agent, was involved. And then they sold that software to a number of intelligence agencies around the world, and there was a back door, and that's, of course, the purpose, that they sell these products, the companies from the entity which are staffed by former Israeli intelligence operatives, make the money, but then Zionist intelligence agencies have a backdoor into the security apparatus of the country. In the case of Ivory Coast, that's true, and in case of many other countries. And there's no other way of saying this than that this is actually about pursuing Zionist interests. Like they do it in America as well. They've actually also penetrated American intelligence and bugged the White House. And if it was the case they were doing this on behalf of the U.S., then they wouldn't be doing that.
Right. Okay. Well, Dan, I mean, what's your assessment of the role played by Epstein in promoting Israel's influence in the Ivory Coast?
Well, again, it seems like he was very critical in that at a time when the government was in a very tenuous position because of a contested election. And the country was either in civil war or on the verge of civil war. He kind of swooped in to help, apparently at least to broker deals with weapons, with intelligence, to secure that government. And that allowed Israel to have incredible influence in that country.
Yeah, no, for sure. Well, our next report discloses the extent of Jeffrey Epstein's role in promoting the Zionist colony's interests in Africa.
Jeffrey Epstein appears to have been much more involved in pursuing Zionist interests in Africa than had previously been known. Epstein had multiple U.S. passports and even an Austrian passport with a fake name he reportedly obtained to travel internationally, though he denied using it. As early as 2001, Epstein was recorded as visiting Morocco with a decorator to visit a house there. In 2017 and 2019, he returned for brief trips. Morocco has regularly and extensively cooperated with the Zionists for decades prior to normalization in 2020. The New York Times states, the two countries have worked together closely but secretly on military and intelligence matters, assassinations, and migration of Jews to Israel. In the early 1960s, King Hassan allowed Mossad to establish a station in Morocco. Mossad then helped organize the Moroccan intelligence service. Testimony from Ghislaine Maxwell confirmed that former President Bill Clinton had traveled on Epstein's private jet on reported humanitarian trips to Africa. In around August 2002, Epstein, Clinton, Kevin Spacey, and Chris Tucker spent a week on a tour of AIDS projects in South Africa, Nigeria, Ghana, Rwanda, and Mozambique. In a 2011 letter requesting a second U.S. passport, Epstein listed future business trips to Sierra Leone, Mali, and Gabon. It is also reported that he visited Senegal and Angola, as well as Côte d'Ivoire. There seems little doubt that some of these trips were intended to pursue Zionist foreign policy priorities. All of these states are, of course, in West Africa, and all have a coastal border, with the exception of Mali. The recent disclosures about Epstein have confirmed earlier statements, which were widely regarded with skepticism. Epstein had bragged he had made a fortune from arms, drugs, and diamonds because he knew the owner of the deepwater port of Djibouti, a smuggler's paradise, so well that he was basically in charge of it. Recently released emails confirmed this was the CEO of DP World, an Emirati state asset. Evidence from Ghislaine Maxwell gives further corroboration. "He showed me a photograph that he had with some African warlords," she said. Given that we know that Zionist special forces have access to DP World sites and the role of both the UAE and the Zionists in multiple African nations, it begins to look like an Africa-wide network. DP World has facilities and ports in Africa in the following countries visited by Epstein: Angola, Mozambique, Rwanda, and Senegal. There is no concrete evidence that Epstein visited DP World sites in Algeria, Egypt, or Somaliland. These revelations suggest new lines of inquiry for those seeking to fully understand Epstein's role in the expansionist foreign policy of the Zionist entity.
Well, David, I mean, we've just heard in our report there that Epstein had links in Morocco. I mean, why do you think Morocco's being so close to the Zionist entity, even before the normalization process started?
Well, I mean, as we heard in the film there, I mean, the very early collaboration between King Hassan and the Mossad is of note. I mean, the Mossad set up a station there, but the Mossad actually set up the Moroccan intelligence agencies. Yeah. And then when it came to the operation that Mossad launched to kidnap Jewish kids to get them to come to the settler colony, that was accomplished with aid from the Moroccan intelligence services, which effectively were Mossad assets. And it was in a particular case, these kids were about to leave and were stopped at the port by the police, and the intelligence services intervened and allowed the children to leave, and they were effectively kidnapped and taken to Israel to become settler colonies. So it's a long, long history of collaboration, and it shows the kind of way in which the Mossad would want to use their involvement in a particular country. You see a very similar thing in the Ivory Coast and in a number of other African countries which we have looked at. So it does look like they are trying to take over and use as assets the intelligence machinery of a number of different countries.
Sure, indeed. Well, Dan, it appears that Epstein made multiple trips to various African countries. I mean, what do you think he was up to?
Well, I think that he was helping broker various arms and intelligence deals with these countries, again, in an effort to be able to exploit these countries' resources. You know, Israel's very much involved in the diamond trade, for example, but they don't have, as far as I know, diamond mines themselves. They're getting them from Africa. And again, Epstein helped facilitate that through these efforts. And if I could add something about Morocco, the other interest that Morocco has had with Israel is that Morocco is illegally occupying West Sahara. And you have Algeria, who's supporting liberation forces there. And Israel has helped Morocco in that effort of occupation and against the liberation forces supported by Algeria, which, again, makes sense for one occupying country, Israel, to be supporting another. Kind of birds of a feather there.
Yeah, indeed. Curious hookup, to say the least. But, David, I mean, Epstein bragged, didn't he, about making a fortune from arms, drugs and diamonds in Africa. I mean, was that the main purpose, do you think, of these activities, in your opinion?
Well, no, obviously it's not the main purpose. But as Dan was saying, I mean, the diamonds is an interesting one because, of course, they were, you know, the implication was they were smuggled out via Djibouti. But the diamond, of course, there are no diamond mines in occupied Palestine.
No.
They're in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and that's where the concessions for diamonds there are owned by Zionists. And we did a program about this some months ago.
Yeah.
And so that's an indication of that link, that the smuggling route was out through Djibouti, and that's how Israel manages to be one of the largest diamond producers in the world. I mean, truly extraordinary. So it's an indication that Epstein had a key role even in that, and that shows the way in which he was effectively, even by doing business, doing business on behalf of the Zionist entity itself. So that's one thing, and the other thing, of course, is that there's all of the foreign policy interests which go along with this smuggling.
Sure, indeed. Well, Dan, I mean, given the role of the Zionists in bugging the Clinton White House and making or obtaining recordings of Clinton and Monica Lewinsky, would you say that this puts a whole new spin on Epstein's trips to Africa with Clinton?
Well, absolutely. First of all, what it shows is that Epstein, as he seems to have over Trump, he had a hold over Clinton, that he was most likely blackmailing Clinton and able to affect Clinton's policies, especially towards Israel. But yeah, these trips then to Africa makes one wonder, were they purely humanitarian? Or was he using Clinton, again, to gain access to these countries, to gain access to resources and business deals for Israel? And most likely that is what he was doing. Again, what Epstein seems to have done, in addition to many things, this was a pretty busy guy, but he was running a blackmail scheme, which again allowed him to have domination over many U.S. politicians, even from the grave, even over Donald J. Trump.
It certainly seems that way, Dan, for sure. But David, do you think his links with the multinational logistics company, DP World, indicate that the Zionist penetration of Africa is much more extensive than we may have thought?
Well, the other week we did a show on Somaliland, where DP World has a port very close to Yemen, which of course is used as a hub by the UAE and by the Zionists for attacking Ansarallah, so if you like, from the back. So yes, of course, that's the case. And then DP World has these hubs all the way around the coast of Africa, including one which is inland, which is in Rwanda, the only one without a coastal border. And so the smuggling happens there, but also the Israeli special forces and the Mossad have access to these ports as well, because the UAE is a proxy. So this means that there's a much greater ability for Mossad to operate all over Africa than we have anticipated.
Sure, indeed. Well, Dan, very briefly, because we're almost out of time, what questions should we be asking about Epstein's role in Africa then, do you think?
Well, we need to ask what he was doing exactly for Israel, what interests he was pursuing there. Again, was he... I think it's very clear he wasn't acting as an individual. He was acting on behalf of the State of Israel, perhaps for Mossad, because we know he did have those connections with Mossad. And it also, we have to ask again, me as an American, I have to ask, what role was he playing in influencing U.S. policy in Africa as well? Again, through these so-called humanitarian flights. He seemed to have a sway over people and over states that was extraordinary.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Well, I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. So I'd like to thank our guest, Dan Kovalik. Make a date to join us again on Palestine Declassified next week, when I'll be back alongside David Miller with more revelations and information that you won't find on the corporate media. But until then, this is Chris Williamson saying bye for now.
Davis, Lou, Goliath, this very same place that we be at. Passing through the saner times, this land been a victim of countless crimes. From crusaders, mongers, to the present aggression. Then the Franks, now even a cruel oppression. If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say. For me in this path that I walk on, there's only one way. Bullets may kill, bones may break. Still I throw stones like David before me, and I say,
try not to cry.
No pierdas la fe, la sé, la calma el que hace. Agua de la arena, y tú que te levantas con orgullo entre las piedras, has hecho mares de este polvo.
Yeah, I throw stones at my eyes, for too long they've been dry. Plus they see what they shouldn't from oppressed babies to thighs. I throw stones at my tongue, cause shit should really keep its peace. I throw stones at my feet, cause they stray and lead to defeat. Couple of big ones at my heart, cause the thing is freezing cold. But my nub's still alive and kicking, unstoppable on a roll. I throw bricks at the devil, so I'll be sure to hit him. But first at the man in the mirror, so I can chase out the venom.
Little boy, shining ahead. Just another kiss and out to get some bread. Not the first murder, nor the last. Again and again, a repetition of the past.
Since the very first day, same story.
Young ones, old ones, some glory. How can it be? Has the whole world turned blind? Or is it just cause it's only affecting my kind? If these walls could speak, imagine what would they say? For me, this path that I walk on, there's only one way.
Bones may kill, bones may break. Still I throw stones. David, I say, bullets may kill, bones may break, still I throw stones. David, I say,
try not to cry.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
fact.
Emmet is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
Some
angels are responsible for our protection. Indeed, over you are keepers. This is mentioned in the Holy Quran, Surah 82, Ayah 10. Or for example, we have when Lady Mary says, and the angels called him. Quran, Surah 3, Ayah 45, meaning the angels spoke with Mary. The day your Lord calls you with 3,000 angels. This is also mentioned in the Holy Quran, Surah 3, Ayah 124. In the Battle of Badr, God sent 3,000 angels to aid the Muslims. Or for example, it says, carries the throne of your Lord. This is mentioned in the Holy Quran too, Surah 69, Ayah 17. Some angels carry God's throne. Angels do not tire from worship. Regarding not tiring, there are several verses that say, they exalt him night and day and do not slacken. This is mentioned in Holy Quran, Surah 21, Ayah 20. They glorify him night and day and do not tire. We have the term, they do not slacken, meaning are not arrogant, they do not tire, and they are engaged in worship night and day. Angels pray for humans. They ask forgiveness for those on earth. This is mentioned in the Holy Quran, Surah 42, Ayah 5. Angels send blessings upon the Prophet. Indeed, Allah and His angels send blessings upon the Prophet. Holy Quran, Surah 33, Ayah 56. There is a hierarchy. For example, we have Allah chooses from the angels. The Holy Quran, Surah 22, Ayah 75. So God has distinguished some angels above others. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening through the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
کتاب الله.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we will listen to the speech of Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
So dear brothers and sisters in Islam, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Brothers and sisters, if you remember from our last session, the title was the God of Fatima. The God of Fatima. And we were focusing on two of Allah's beautiful names. Allah has many beautiful names. We were focused on two of Allah's beautiful names, and the idea was to have these two names sit into our heart, to actualize, to realize these two names. Those two names, brothers and sisters, one of them was Kabir. Allah is Al-Kabir, but to really believe that He is great. And the second one was Al-Azim. Allah is grand. So the idea was to have some discussions where we would try to make this part of our collective existence. Now, we did take a few steps over the last three lectures, last thing. We took a few steps, but we're not out of the woods yet. We definitely haven't achieved those objectives that we were trying to get from this lecture series. If we're able to do this correctly, as a community, and I'll mention why it's so important for us as a community to do this. But inshallah, that's next. What are the objectives? What happens if myself or any of you or us as a community, we are able to come to the conclusion, and not talking about lip service, but really to believe that Allah is Azim. Allah is Kabir. What happens to a community that believes in that way? To individuals who have embraced those two names of Allah. Several things happen. Number one, brothers and sisters, inshallah, we will develop what is the Quranic definition or the Quranic expectation for the wonderful word ikhlas. We've all heard of ikhlas. We know about sincerity. There's a Quranic expectation of ikhlas that we're supposed to develop. So one of the benefits of this discussion is developing that. Number two, if we can embrace Allah with these two names, we will trust Allah with every fiber of our being. Number three, our fears and anxieties will disappear. If we're able to do this the right way, we'll go through life without fear. So number three is that our fears and our anxieties will disappear. Number four, the promises of Allah will be something that we can take to the bank. If we will rely on Allah's promises. What else? Brothers and sisters, with these two names, if they're realized the right way, you can take the word despair out of our vocabulary. We're going to end up redefining the words honor and glory. If we're able to do this the right way, we'll end up redefining these things. What we will see as honor and glory is going to be different based on the understanding. We will also see ourselves as nothing before Allah. And I'm going to mention again why I need everybody to be part of this, right? Also, our emotional relationship with Allah will be different. We're going to truly fall deeply in love with Allah. And this is just the beginning of the journey. But one of the results is that we'll really have that deep love of Allah. What else? We will also see ourselves as nothing before Allah. So we're going to have an intense feeling of humility that, brothers and sisters, we won't even be able to describe, but it's something we have to sense that comes from those two names of Allah. Lastly, two more things. We're going to also develop a healthy fear of God. If Allah is truly Azim, then I'll develop a healthy fear of Allah, and then I will want to stay away from sin. I'll develop that motivation. And last, our ability to resist is going to increase dramatically. We will actually find ourselves enjoying difficulties. Other people are broken by masaib, difficulties, they collapse. The person who believes that Allah is Azim and Kabir will be able to enjoy those difficulties and be able to continue to resist. So the person who's like this will resist and will be, there's no comparison between the two. So, as I mentioned before, brothers and sisters, this is something where actually I need the help of the community. These discussions are not something that I can just say on the minbar and inshallah it'll be fixed, right? We would need to all pull our weight. If we want the next generation of Muslims not to be floundering in the same mistakes that we are, all of us have to buy in. Right now, we're not in the situation that we want to be, and I just have to be honest about that. So, inshallah, with this, we can go from being mediocre. Remember, I'm speaking to you guys, and this is an audience of practicing Muslims. We're practicing Muslims. We believe in our social and our political responsibilities. We're people of wajibat, right? So talking to this community, for this community, do we want to go on being mediocre, or are we looking for excellence? If we're looking for excellence, then these discussions are for us. That would mean then, brothers and sisters, in order for these discussions to be a success, I have to look at myself. And each one of you have to look at yourselves. Let's see, when the ayat of the Quran are speaking, are they talking to me? Is there room for me to grow? As opposed to, yeah, I hope you heard that, right? That's a different approach. This one, can I grow? Can I benefit myself? Because otherwise, then we'll continue to flounder as Muslims have floundered for a long time. Let me remind you of one of the hadith of Amir al-Mu'mineen. He says this, Ya ayyuhan nas, O people, the Imam is addressing us, O people, Tuba liman shagalahu aibuhu an uyubin nas. Blessed, fortunate is the person who is distracted by his own flaws from the flaws of others.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karimun Azim Alimun Halim Hakimun Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا
Thank you.
Greetings, dear listeners. I'm welcoming you to another meaningful hour here on Iran Radio. First, let's embark on another global journey with Round the World with Reporters. Our correspondents will bring you more fascinating reports on a variety of subjects from their regions. Diverse stories from across the globe. Following that, we bring you The Keys of Life, hosted by Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musavi. This program aims to introduce the Islamic lifestyle based on the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Javadi Amuli, Practical Guidance for a Purposeful Life. After The Keys of Life, we delve into viewpoints. Here, Brother Atta and Sayyid Ali Marashi will lead an analytical roundtable discussion of various religious, political, cultural, and social issues of the Islamic world today. In this program, we pay particular attention to mainstream news of the Islamic issues and Muslim lands. Coming up, it's time for more Round the World with Reporters. Don't go anywhere.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.